Hello and welcome to Section D, the weekly design hour here on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. For this episode, we went on a field trip and hopped across the channel to the Belgian city of Antwerp. Home to the exceptional Academy of Fine Arts, this week the master's students of the fashion department celebrated their graduation show, and we were there in force to spot the stars of tomorrow's fashion industry. Coming up, we speak to Walter van Berendonck, one of the original Antwerp Six, now director of the fashion department at the Academy.
We definitely try to push them and try to push their boundaries, because what I really enjoy to teach and what I think of one of my strengths is that I have a very huge fantasy and I can easily get into the heads of the students.
We sit down with editor of The Gentlewoman and jury member for the MA student collections, Penny Martin.
They're not allowed to rely quite on so much external help. They're not allowed to rely on so many machinists, and they don't act like art directors. They really have to be at the centre of what they do.
And our intrepid producer, Gillian Tobias, cast her beady eye over the students and picked out her tips for future stardom too.
Fashion is essentially a tool for a lot of people to present yourself so you can show people on an outer side what is inside. I hope that's what's the most important, is to help somebody better explain and express who they are.
All that, plus we hopped over to Axel Verwoerd's chateau nearby to talk to him about his passion for collecting. We report on the changing nature of commissioning fashion photography at the recent IER festival, and we drop in on Paulista fashion designer with a difference, Flavia Aranha, in Brazil. That's all to come over the next hour here on Section D. Welcome to a Belgian fashion special of sorts here on Section D. The graduation shows are where the industry heads to cherry-pick raw talent. It's where rising stars are discovered and a heady place to witness the raw talent of the next generation of fashion designers. The Antwerp Academy of Fine Arts Fashion School has a reputation for turning out some of the most cutting-edge and intellectually stimulating designers of the day. Walter van Berendonck was one of the legendary Antwerp Six. Along with Dries van Noten, Anne de Mullemeester and Martin Margiela, who shook the fashion world when they graduated in the early 1980s. Walter is now director of the fashion department, and as the class of 2012 comes of age, our producer Gillian Tobias sat down with him to talk about the Antwerp approach.
I think that Antwerp Academy, the fashion school, has a very specific vision, because as long as I remember, I graduated here, I came back very quickly after 3 years, I started to teach, and what for us is extremely important is the very individual approach. So we work very individual with the students. We give them the possibility to learn and work with a very strong signature. And we really don't want them to adapt themselves to a certain system or to be very flexible to be in the fashion world. No, that we really try to make very strong individuals. And then afterwards, of course, they can adapt them. We definitely try to push them and try to push their boundaries, because what I really enjoy to teach and what I think of one of my strengths is that I have a very huge fantasy and I can easily get into the heads of the students. And it's not that I try to change their vision, no, I just want to broaden their vision. And one of the things which is extremely important for us is that that also are aware of the contemporary world, what it's going on. We push them to look around, we push them to look to art and to be interested in a lot of different topics. And from that point of view out, we push them and we try to broaden their world. And that results then in more interesting collections. Fashion is a strong communicator, and we really see fashion as a kind of communication. Also, one of the visions of the Antwerp School is that you can tell stories through your collections and what you are making. And that, again, it can be a very individual story that you're telling. And we definitely believe in the power of fashion one way or another. And of course, we also want that from the students, that they go further than just making clothes. We want them to tell it and to show it and to communicate through it. And then it can be all different types of statements and visions, and you can tell anything you want through fashion. The students changed, but also time changed a lot. And if I'm thinking back to the 80s, which was like an incredible explosion of fashion, what was happening with French designers, Gautier, Mugler, Montana, and then afterwards the Japanese designers arriving there, like Kawakubo and Yoshiyama Moto. It was an incredible moment of fashion in general, and it was also like a kind of euphoria which was going on at that time. And it really showed us, the students which were at that time at the school, that everything was possible, every statement that you could tell and every individual statement that you wanted to make was possible through fashion. And in the meantime, of course, the world changed. The situation of fashion changed, communication changed a lot, so it's now a totally different attitude towards that also. But on the other hand, I think that what we had time at that time and what we have now, it's one way or another still comparable, because we still have this cocoon way of working, and we have this, we give the students the possibility to work 4 years on themselves and to really found themselves in the way they're doing. We know the world changed, economic situations changed, communication changed, and we try to introduce it and we try to attract their attentions also on these facts, but in fact it's not the most important for us. This cocoon thing is there and the world is around, and from time to time the world gets in, but they have the possibility to stay in the cocoon. I think it was very obvious on the catwalk that there are at the moment two contrasts very obviously there. It's like one side you have this romantic fantasy feeling, and the other side has a very clear aggression. And aggression which can be reflected through pamphlets and to reacting and also sex and using certain elements in the collections. But these two elements are there very obviously. And I think it's definitely reflecting the world also.
That was Walter van Berendonk, director of the fashion department at the Antwerp Royal Academy. The Antwerp Academy graduation fashion show took place over 3 days and culminated with an emotional finale on Saturday night. Gillian Tobias was there and scouted out the students she felt were on the threshold of success.
This is the sound of euphoria and the sound of Antwerp fashion students celebrating the culmination of 1, 2, 3, and most importantly, 4 years at one of the most rigorous and challenging fashion schools in the world. For the master's students, it's time to emerge from the cocoon and learn to fly. And flight was the starting point for Tabitha Ostler's wistful and inventively crafted collection.
The concept of the collection, it was inspired by gleaning and changing migratory patterns in birds as a result or reaction to climate change, and how the study of changing migratory patterns is an indication of how the environment is changing and being slowly destructed. In terms of the formation of the silhouettes, the outer layers were about destruction, the under layers were about renewal. The outer layers were more monochromatic, and the under layers were about color and abundance and growth and renewal. So I used smocking, which is a technique where it brings all the fabric together, but then at a certain point it really bursts out and grows if you let go of the threads. And I also used protective materials for the outer layers, like I used bark from a tree, which in its natural environment protects the tree. I use that on the jeans, and I use porcupine quills, which protect a porcupine, obviously, as a defensive mechanism. In the actual jackets, stitching the front of the jackets and using it in places in the jackets where it's actually protecting the female underneath. Fashion is essentially a tool for a lot of people to present yourself so you can show people on an outer side what is inside, I hope. I mean, a lot of people use it in different ways to, in fact, mask what's inside, and it can be used in many different ways. But for me, that's what's the most important, is to help somebody better explain and express who they are.
The Antwerp Fashion Academy has a reputation for seeing fashion as a form of expression and for encouraging students to think about how clothing can reflect society. Questioning society today contributed to the power of Wali Mohammed Baresh's bizarre and beautiful pieces.
It's mainly inspired by a Franco-Italian movie from the 60s called Les yeux sans visage, in English, Eyes Without a Face. And it's about a Parisian plastic surgeon who's pioneering in the face transplantation, and it's a black and white movie. And he has a daughter who was incredibly beautiful called Christiane, and both of them got into a car crash. The father is completely fine, but the daughter, Christiane, she lost all her beauty. Her face was completely burned. And if you think about our generation or my generation nowadays, this whole notion of celebrityism and this instant accessibility of beauty, and you have to be this way, you have to look that way, you have to dress this way to be accepted in certain social environments. And for me, this is really, really striking because, I mean, to what extent do people or do my generation go to be accepted? So the collection is called For Love. For me, it was really interesting to try to translate this notion of plasticism and this plastic lifestyle. Everything is shiny and this Hollywood and, you know, the wavy hair and just this plasticity of things. So I tried to translate that into the garment by using a lot of plastics and shiny things, and just to create this notion, everything is shiny, but on what basis? I really, really discovered what I like here, what I stand for, without doubt. And I think it erases a lot of doubt in you. I mean, it's a really, really hard process to allow yourself to like something without lying to yourself. And this is something I find very striking. I learned, of course, a lot how to stitch, etc., all of these things. But mainly, it's more discovering yourself as a fashion designer, as a, you know what your world is, and you know what to find in your world and how to translate it in your manner with your hands and your handwriting. And this is, I think, what I learned in these 4 years.
Fusing good taste with bad taste to spectacular effect, Manon Kunding's work was a perfect illustration of how students are responding to the times they're designing in.
I imagined this man that wants to show off with what he has, for example. So I worked with prints, showing how much money he would have, or cars, or taste, or whatever what he likes. So make all these little characters like little birds. Also because we wouldn't judge the physical point of view, so they're completely covered. We don't see any human part of them. It's just this mass of prints and colors. It's mainly silk, actually, because I think it's a really nice, rich fabric, like to look rich. And after I mixed it with fake fur, you have like coats fake fur with real snake, because the bird would not care about its elitarism. Like, and it's interesting, in fashion, you always want to use rich fabrics, and you don't mix real snake with fake fur, for example. And I did really a lot of digital printing to have this bright look. Also, a lot of digital printing, it's really like Google Images and stuff like this. I really love it. I even don't mind if there is this kind of watermarks or stuff on images. I would have really a lot of copyright problem with this collection if I would produce it. Wouldn't go at all. But I enjoy this. It's like the bird. I just pick images in Google Image and put them together.
The finale of this year's show was a hauntingly beautiful collection by Marios Yanousaukos. With a nod to couture, it was rich in research with layers of hidden meaning thoughtfully applied.
Fashion for me, first of all, it's a research. It's a research about the human. It's research about who they are, how they think. And this is how I started also with Sleeping Beauty. I started really looking up for images of sleeping beautiful woman. And surprisingly, I found it in horror movies. The girl who sleeps for ages and she's still young and she's still beautiful. And that's how I got to the idea of the undead as such. And that's how I got the fabrics, which I buried under the ground. And the treatment, all the garments you see, they are treated with the soil, natural soil, in a natural environment. So basically I have a little bit procedure of digging out the undead and then make it alive again. And this is how I reach this degradé feeling, this decadence in the garments. And I still want them to show that this is not really dead, it's still alive. And that's how I got into idea of blood, expression of blood. All the pieces are made with a red thread only. in this school, teachers were very, they were very deep. So they let you go into your research as deep as you can. If you still can prove that you can control your work and that you can produce fashion aesthetics in the end, they let you go really deep. And this is what's very, very important aspect for me. I think that also the Belgium itself as a country and mentality of Belgians also really worked for me, because they have the deepness, and this was very, very good for me to study myself as well, not only study fashion at the same time. My dream is to create beautiful garments, which will be needed, which will make people feel good, because I really care about people and I really love my work. But just to make a more clear ideas, I would like to work for a fashion house which has goals, which has really strong beliefs in fashion. And afterwards, if it goes well, I really see myself as being a designer on my own.
That was Gillian de Bias with her pick of the students tipped for the big time from the Master's Fashion Department at the Antwerp Royal Academy. We'll be back in a moment to hear from jury member Penny Martin. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly programme on the best in design, architecture, graphics and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus. Creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
The menu is Monocle's delectable food and drinks program with me, Markus Hippi. On the menu, you'll find out about delicious edibles and mouth-watering drinks. We traverse the globe in search of the pioneers, making a stir amongst the food connoisseurs. We hunt down the wonderful and sometimes weird tasty trends that are making a buzz in the food industry.
We've been sort of traveling and collecting stories and collecting projects. So one of the things we hope to do is to connect all these narratives across these different geographies.
Milan to Tokyo, Buenos Aires to Auckland. Each week we send our correspondents to the far-flung corners of the world. We pop into independent bakeries, butchers and wineries to find people passionate about what they make. From French cheese to Bulgarian wine. From Japanese chocolates to South African caterpillar snacks. The menu premieres every Friday at 1900 hours GMT. Join us for a drink where everything is on the menu.
That's The Menu, premiering every Friday at 1900 hours UK time in association with Krug.
It started with a shop in London's Marylebone, and now Monocle has stores in New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and a shop in Osaka. And then there's the Monocle Cafe in Tokyo. Come in to find exclusive collaborations with brands we believe in, from Barenna jackets to Porter luggage. Great for gifts, even better for personal treats. And if you're missing an issue from your Monocle archive, we can soon fix that. Visit monocle.com for store addresses and opening times. The Monocle Shop. Carefully crafted design, proud of its provenance.
Welcome back to Section D, and straight back to the Antwerp Royal Academy. The MA students' collections are judged by illustrious industry figures, leading lights in fashion design, media, photography, all the varied disciplines that students will have to connect with to succeed in the business. It's an honour few turn down, and this year Penny Martin, editor-in-chief of The Gentlewoman, was selected to deliberate the work of this year's 11 hopefuls.
From talking to the designers, I get a sense that they're taught to be incredibly self-sufficient. I think compare them with other courses, MA courses across the world, that they're not allowed to rely quite on so much external help. You know, they're not allowed to rely on so many machinists, and they don't act like art directors. They really have to be at the centre of what they do. I mean, I haven't quite unpacked Walter's own personal approach, although obviously he's deeply personally involved with them. And I think that it was very interesting listening to talk to the external panel, because he put a lot of store by what they would say, because he knew that the involvement of the team was such. But they talk about being cocooned, and I think, I don't know whether that means in terms of being in a city that isn't, you know, constantly relying on other international fashion cities, but I think there is a very sort of familial tough love kind of approach that you see between the dynamic between the tutors and the students. I think it's hard not to immediately be struck by the execution. I mean, the make is fantastic for an MA student. And, you know, that's even more surprising when you find out that they've really got to execute it themselves. It's not that they're paying other people to do their finishing for them. I think, you know, obviously they have some collaboration with other practitioners, but, you know, the standard is fantastic. And, you know, it's a really, they're really coherent collections. You know, obviously not every one of them's edited perfectly, but, you know, when you see the show, you know, it's really head and shoulders above many others internationally, I think, and they can rightfully hold their head up as the kind of very high fashion MA. There's actually a very strong fantasy element, I thought, which was surprising. Certainly when we look at a lot of what's fashionable in contemporary kind of design at the moment is all this kind of wearability. And in some quarters of the course, I think there was some almost a reaction against that, and that was quite interesting to see. I think one of the strengths of this course historically has been that it's turned out a lot of designers who have gone on to form their own companies and with their own very singular sensibility. But, you know, of course it's really tough at the moment, and if you talk to buyers, you know, that not that many designers, you know, that are going to make it. So I think that to have a course that, you know, says itself that it's incredibly rigorous, I think they get really tough critiques. And when they said at the end of the judging, oh, you can go and tell them what you said, because believe me, they will have heard it already. And you think, oh gosh, you know, I think some courses you just don't get that contact. So, you know, again, having 11 students in an MA, I mean, what a luxury. When I first started in fashion, probably about 10 years ago, it was obviously at a kind of really strong period. And that's what sort of first became aware of kind of young designers and the focus in Antwerp. And I think what people were saying at that time was that it was designers that had a very specific worldview, and that the fact that they were trained in this city that didn't have to kind of ask permission of all the other major fashion cities meant that it concentrated a very personal kind of aesthetic and approach that sustained designers for a long period of time. They weren't just creating one kind of fashionable sense that kind of burnt out within 5 years and then you didn't hear about the designer. And it's true that many of those designers 10 years ago are now the ones in the kind of leading jobs right across the industry. So it sort of creates a sort of sustainable almost fashion ideology almost, and I think that's what we see still in the designers now.
That was Penny Martin, jury member for the graduate fashion show at the Antwerp Royal Academy and editor-in-chief of The Gentlewoman. And in honour of our Antwerp stars, this is Belgian band Aeroplane with Superstar. That was Superstar by Aeroplane. You're listening to Section D here on Monocle 24. We step away from fashion for a moment, but stay in Antwerp, a harbour city with a rich history in collecting. It's fitting then that Antwerp is also home to one of the world's most renowned collectors, Axel Vervoort. He's been described as an antiques dealer, an interior designer, and an entrepreneur. But the reality of his unique passion and spirit defies definition. Gillian de Byers grasped the opportunity to visit Vervoort in his chateau. It's home to his personal collection. And she spoke to him there about his life in art and objects.
I think you could translate it in kind of passion. You know, passion I had from a childish already, you know, I was very curious about things. And I always had a lot of love for nature, not a love for very simple things, like first flowers in spring and stones I gravelled on the streets, and my mother and my father, they had the good collector's friends, and I was very quickly excited in looking at their collection, what they bought new, also diamond dealers who showed me diamonds. So from childish already, I was very interested in material, recognizing it and the beauty of it, you know, and so quite quickly, I think I wanted to become a collector. And when I was at the age of 14, I went on my own to England on buying trips, where, you know, and I came back with loads of things I could just all carry on the ferry boat. And then all the friends of my parents wanted to buy it, and I always wanted to keep one object for me, and I could afford to buy more. So every school holiday, when I was at the Jesuit College, you know, I was on buying trips. It's always been between business, art, philosophy, you know, way of life, a new way of life, loving beautiful, simple things as well. You know, not always the glamours and the gold and the gilt, but things that have a soul. That's why I love stones so much, because I think stones also have a soul. And it's this authenticity and this soul I've been looking through everything, through contemporary art, through old art, could be Egyptian, could end the lifestyle. That's why I always loved silver as well, because I love to use silver. Not to put silver in the showcase, but I love the touch of beautiful 17th century, 18th silver, and I think it just has a different quality than new silver and a different warmth. And so there's always been a big love for old things, and then I've been thinking, why I like old so much more than something new? Because then I think the new thing, yes, is there's kind of aggressivity in it. Because you have to cut a rock, you have to cut a piece of wood, you have to cut a tree to make something new. We have to continue making things new. But once it's made, you know, it looks so sharp and dry. And I think it needs oxidation with the time. And oxidation is a mixture with the material and the air. So it's an act of love between the material and the air. It's a cosmic gesture. I accept also the beauty of the imperfection. It's not like a dogmatic taste that I want everything should be like that or should be like that. I think I like to be a servant to nature and to things and always searching for a new harmony and be like a child, you know, it's everything is a discovery. I think all my life I have to live with them because I think a lot of objects are very personal. For example, the Fontana Natura, but I think my children will like that as well. That's for me a very important object. I would not like to miss because it's quite of the essence of things I like. You know, it's a cosmic object. It's just Earth. It's extremely simple. It's the first gesture of a human being to transform material. You know, it's like the beginning of everything. It's creating a third dimension, you know, the concetto spaziale. And it's also this sense of emptiness, you know, of infinity, of non-finished, of beauty, of imperfection. And it just, it's very powerful for me in silence. It's silent power. You can meditate for it and still it gives you interior force. There's no decoration, there's no superficial. It's one of the objects I really love, you know. But there's so many others in the house I like very, very dearly. It's like living in the castle I love. And I love a library full of wonderful objects and very warm feeling. I love my office where I work, which is a beautiful room with the marquetry floor and with the, all the silver and marble things. You know, I think it's a good room to do with the fireplace and looking in the park and the mahogany furniture, you know, more English atmosphere. I like that very much to do phones and calls and listen to an opera while I'm working, doing all night all my mails. You know, it's just the right atmosphere. But then at once I think this is enough. I want to clear my mind, you know, and then I just love to come here. And I think it's fantastic if you're capable to have the two. For me, it's very important to have in a busy life more this, the coziness of a good glass of wine, a cigar even, a fireplace and a dog sleeping next to you. It's just a lovely atmosphere. It's feeling also the difference in qualities of emptiness. There's a fuller and a less full emptiness, you know. There's more spiritual emptiness, more material emptiness. Because that, it really helps you a lot to have a richer life, you know, a broader life, more timeless life. So I think you can live longer in the same 1 year, because when you feel all this, and you can travel from one atmosphere to the other.
That was Axel Vervoet, collector extraordinaire, talking us through his habit of hoarding at his Antwerp chateau. We're departing Belgium for the French Riviera after this. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
If you're on the go but still want to stay tuned in to Monocle 24, then download the Monocle mobile phone app. You'll have access to our live stream, past shows, Monocle's daily web column, and our 2525 city guides. And it's available for iPhone, Windows Phone 7, and Nokia N9 devices. So take Monocle 24 with you wherever you are, whether you're beachside or airborne. Head to monocle.com for more details.
Fashion photography is an art form that often draws on influences, but have we reached a stage where true originality is harder and harder to come by? Despite a booming industry, a lack of diversity in pre- and post-production can lead to homogenous work across high-level titles. Hazel Pfeiffer visited IER Festival in the south of France to find out what the commissioning editors are really looking for. Surprisingly, fashion wasn't so important.
We are bombarded with more and more images every day. But even with such abundance, truly memorable fashion photography is still a prized commodity. Jodi Kwan, the photography director of New York Magazine, takes a broad view.
People have a very narrow-minded view of what is a fashion photographer. You know, some of the great photographers are like Helmut Newton. You know, that was very beautifully said, you know, that the best fashion photograph is a photograph that is anything but fashion. You know, every conversation I have with a photographer always begins with, what would get you excited? Where do you see a great photograph? Where do you see a great photo story happening? And then you start a conversation, and much of the time I might think X, you know, X idea, and through much conversation, you know, the close relationship between photographer and photo editor is that many times your story, your idea might be one, just really the seed of an idea, which then through dialogue and communication and back and forth conversation you come away with a much more evolved idea.
At Yale Festival in the south of France, a heated discussion on the current state of the industry took place outside in the April sunshine. The panel of experts, including Jody, agreed that fashion itself should take a backseat to the bigger picture.
It's become a very closed culture. The photographers that are shooting the advertisements are also the same photographers that are doing the editorials. So that's why you get the same set of photographers shooting for all the different magazines.
Although fashion photography is bound by many restrictions, it's also where photographers can let their imagination run free. The balance lies in diversity of voices, according to Time magazine photography director Kira Pollock.
So, to have a really dynamic magazine, you really want to assign a lot of different kinds of people that are going to be translating the stories in a really authentic, original way. And I'm in a position, a time where that's what we do, which is exciting. I mean, obviously we're documentary, we're doing news, but we're pushing it forward in different directions.
Well, you do also do a fashion issue.
We do a fashion issue. We just relaunched our style and design issue. We just relaunched the spring issue, and we'll have a fall issue. And, and it's exciting too, because again, it just allows us to push it. I mean, with documentary photography, we can only do so much with, we cannot manipulate images. We are straight, straight on documentary, and this allows us to have a lot more fun.
So how hard is it as a new voice to make yourself heard by the establishment? I spoke to Japanese photographer Yasuyuki Tagachi, one of the finalists in the photography competition at the festival.
Honestly, I think it's been very slow and difficult, but the border between like commercial or art or all these things, everything has become so blurry and things are really changing, and it's, we just experienced the digital revolution and film and conventional things disappearing just overnight, where there was hundreds, 150 years of history of film and all this stuff just getting slashed in like 5 years. It's quite a revolution going on, and with technology developing and things like Instagram bought for $1 billion and the money, all these monies shifting elsewhere and new people coming in, I think it's quite chaotic. But whatever that is, I do photography because it's kind of what I've been collecting, and it's something very important to me and of my past, of understanding my family or whatever it is. It's a challenge, but it's also something that's in me that I can take it,
I asked another finalist, American photographer Brea Suders, if her vivid abstract work lent itself to shooting fashion.
I'm personally really interested in it. I mean, in my work, I'm drawn to textiles and color and design, and so, I have a personal interest in that connection to fashion. And it seems to me, from an outsider, like fashion is a fairly closed world. Like it's a very small amount of people operating within it. Like a small pool of photographers shooting it, small pool of designers. And I like the idea of artists getting involved in fashion and opening that world up and creating a larger audience for both fashion and art world by merging them a bit.
Colombian photographer Manuel Vazquez reached the final with his series of self-absorbed pedestrians commuting through imaginary urban landscapes. Using post-production to replicate and reposition his subjects, Manuel's work has a repetitive, surreal quality that could be adapted to innovative fashion editorials.
Yeah, why not? I'm very open to do any kind of challenge photography. Of course, my work is it has a style and it has a line, and maybe it is not very evident that it could be used in fashion, but if someone is willing to give me the freedom to do what I do, I would love to do it.
Despite a shrinking pool of established fashion photographers, it seems the ever-elusive original vision is still the holy grail. Leslie Simich from Trunk Archive saw the potential in Manuel's work.
I think he's very good.
they are unique. I mean, it's a combination of what really happened in front of his camera and then what he did in his computer after the camera, and that makes it something that I could never see with my own eye. So it is the fact that he combined the different people within one situation, but it's something that never occurred in real life, and it only occurred in his mind. And in a way, that makes it unique.
So that's what you're looking for above all, is uniqueness.
Uniqueness, a new way of looking at the world.
For Monocle in Year, I'm Hazel Pfeiffer.
That was Leslie Simich from Trunk Archive talking to Monocle reporter Hazel Pfeiffer at the recent IER Festival of Fashion and Photography. And from France, we head to Brazil, Sao Paulo to be precise. In the bustling urban metropolis where luxury labels rule, one fashion designer is doing things differently. Flavia Aranha's fashion line of the same name creates and designs environmentally friendly and sustainable fashion. And on the heels of the Rio 20 Sustainability Summit happening in the country, it's only fitting to hear about sustainable fashion methods in Brazil. Monocle reporter Sheena Rossiter met with Flavia Aranha to hear about her environmentally friendly and innovative fashion techniques.
In a single room above a clothing store in Sao Paulo's trendy neighborhood, Vila Madalena, a single seamstress is hard at work, sewing together plain white pieces of raw cotton to make what will become a t-shirt. The clothes then make their way down the stairs and into Flavia Arena's display window. But what makes this store different from the neighboring fashion boutiques? All the clothing and accessories here are made from locally produced fibers and tinted with natural dyes from roots and vegetables, from everything to the acumba plant, which is used by indigenous Brazilians to create paints, to natural fish leather. Flavia has been making clothes like this for 3 years, and she explains why she decided to break away from designing clothes at Elis, one of Brazil's biggest fashion labels, to start her own sustainable fashion line.
It was a very good experience since it was my first big work, but after some years, I understood the system of a big company and this thing to make everything in China and slave work. Well, it wasn't very easy to me to live with this. So I started to research if it was possible to make fashion, but in a way that was like more comfortable for me. So I tried to discover some way to make fashion, but something that could match my values.
Flavia is one of the few fashion designers who's producing fashion in a 100% sustainable way. With lots of varied vegetation and lots of local textile producers, Brazil has a fertile landscape to help sustainable fashion designers like Flavia flourish.
Well, we have a lot of communities in Brazil, and we have a really rich vegetation here in Brazil. So I started to research in the interior of Brazil, and I discovered a lot of communities that knows how to dye with vegetables. So I dye with roots, with some plants. I started to learn how to make this process with these people. This is a knowledge passed mother to children, you know. So now I have a lot of works together with these communities, and I can buy some cotton, I can buy some pigments to make my clothing. So I have a lot of different processes. I have a community in South that makes the silk, the sustainable silk. Each collection, I discover something new. For example, I make accessories with fish leather. That is some people from Mato Grosso. The most, I think, the most rich place in Brazil is Cerrado. Cerrado is the interior of Brazil, is Goiás. So it's the center of the country. That is not rich money, rich in vegetation, because we have a lot of dyeing plants there. So I have lots of communities in Cerrado to help me on the dyeing.
Victoria, Flavia's shop assistant, takes me through Flavia's fall and winter 2012 collection. Dominated by neutral colors and minimalist designs, Flavia keeps her collection simple. And that's something that she doesn't plan to stray from. For her 2013 spring and summer collection, though, she'll be moving into more coral and pink tones. She's trying to emulate colors of quartz stones in her designs, which will be on sale in August.
I'm trying to make these colors of stones that are natural colors also, but different weights from the soil and other things. And this is what the focus of my collection. And there is a conceptual thing, you know. Maybe people don't know, but it's something that inspires me, that is like something very hard, but very old, and very shining and kind of eternal, you know? So this is what I'm thinking about for next collection.
But the process of getting these pieces of clothing into the store isn't easy.
It seems to be like a conventional process, but it's all natural products. And it's very nice because to get this, we needed to work a lot. We needed to make a lot of tests. And I think in the world, there's not many people doing this. It's a very Brazilian research, you know. We have some people in the world, but not making the way we are making.
Is it really challenging to dye and create clothing in a natural way? Because it is a bit more difficult than, you know, outsourcing things to China and India, for example. Can you talk about that, if it is a challenge?
Yeah, it's very hard because we have not many options, and the world is so China and big volumes and all these polluting things that making this is really hard. Making with quality is really hard. We need to research, we need to have equipment, and there's no demand. So, I mean, it's starting to have a demand, but it's very small. So it's not easy. We need to improve the technology to make this past knowledge becomes real nowadays. Flavia Aranha, boa tarde.
But fashion designers in a younger generation, like 27-year-old Flavia, are becoming more and more conscious about the environmental impacts of the multi-billion dollar fashion industry. And Flavia does see that sustainable fashion is starting to gain more traction.
I can see mainly small companies, some fashion designers that are starting their career. They want to make this. I receive many mails every day. Students want to work with me. They want to make this. So I think in the future, we will have really sustainable fashion in Brazil because we have history, we have the vegetation, we have the soil to plant the cotton. So I believe that we have a big structure to make sustainable fashion here in Brazil.
And she has definitely started to gain more attention in her native Brazil and abroad. Flavia Aranha's label now exports clothing and accessories to the likes of Japan, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. She's happy that both her label and other sustainable, environmentally friendly labels are gaining more demand in the fashion industry. But she is critical. She thinks that some of the world's so-called sustainable fashion is just greenwash, since sustainable fashion, after all, is in fashion at the moment.
But today, if I need to be very honest with you, I think we have mainly marketing that real sustainable fashion.
A cluster of cars make their way down the street in front of Flavia's store. One stops and a woman from Rio de Janeiro comes in to look around. It's one small step in hopes that more people in Sao Paulo and Brazil alike will be wearing more naturally made fashions when they take to the streets of this urban jungle. From Monocle, in Sao Paulo, I'm Sheena Rossiter.
That was Monocle's Sheena Rossiter at Paulista designer Flavia Aranha's studio in her hometown of Sao Paulo. And that brings us to the end of this week's Section D. Next week, we're going trade fair-tastic. We'll be hitting North America's biggest contract furniture fair, Neocon, in Chicago. We'll head to Basel for this year's installment of Design Miami, and we'll wind up in Berlin for this year's DMY Berlin Young Designers Fair. Phew, be sure to tune in then. Today's show was produced by Gillian DeBias and edited by James Bacon. I'm Hugo MacDonald, and playing you out, here's Australian electro poppers Cut Copy with Blink and You'll Miss a Revolution. Goodbye.